Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy, which is brought to you every Friday night here on KCRW. At least it's Friday night for the month of March, and after that, well, we'll talk about that at the end of the show. I'll tell you all about what's happening to this program in the future. But meanwhile, it's time to begin the first of four very special programs. This is something I've been trying to get going for a long time, and I am happy to say that it has finally happened. My guest tonight, and for the next 3 weeks as well, should be no stranger to this audience. His well-known success in the field of comedy records is shadowed only by his more private success in the world of advertising, helping to make the ads we all are subjected to entertaining as well as effective. As if this weren't enough, now he's gone and written a book, the first half of his memoirs, called It Only Hurts When I Laugh. I could fill the rest of the four shows with his credits and awards, but I think we'd all be better served if I just said, welcome, Stan Freberg.
Hello, Robert.
It's good to have you here.
Yeah, if I'd known I was going to be here for 4 weeks, I might have brought a sleeping bag and a toothbrush or something.
Well, we have a change of clothing here for you.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, thanks so much.
And a shower and all.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
The story of how you got your start in show business reads like a cheap showbiz novel. Amazing, but true. Could it really have been that simple?
A cheap showbiz novel?
Well, who would believe something like that? You just got off the bus.
That's it. It's all true. As God is my judge, it's all true. Not much exaggeration at all, really, comedic effect.
Well, can you tell the story? You just took the bus from Pasadena.
Yeah. It seems as though that couldn't have happened, but I'm telling you, it happened. I graduated from high school, and I had two scholarships, one to Stanford and one to Redlands, having won all these speech tournaments in high school. And I said, well, I'm going to, take the bus into Hollywood and see if I can break into showbiz, you know. And this is before I go on to college, of course. My mother said, look, Stanley, you don't just get off the bus and step right into a job, you know. But nevertheless, she packed me a sandwich, and I talk about this in the book. And my dad told me to get back before dark because there's a lot of weird people walking around in Hollywood, son, you know. Anyhow, in the middle of Hollywood, I say to the bus driver, is this the middle of Hollywood? He's checking me out in the rearview mirror. Where do you want to go, kid? I said, I would just anywhere like in the middle of Hollywood. He slams on the brakes, says, this is as middle as it gets, right? Lets me off at the corner of Hollywood Boulevard, and I think it was like Hudson Avenue. Anyhow, I couldn't believe it. Across the street is this, today, is the Coca-Cola sign that stood blinking down at me, this giant red Coke sign, right? I walk into the first building I see, and there's an Orange Julius stand on the ground floor. Walk in, and there's an invisible weaver, you know, and as God would have it, a talent agent. Stars of Tomorrow, it said. Talent agents. I said, God, a real talent agent. I can't believe it. So I went out and had an Orange Julius and thought it over. And then I finally got up my nerve, took this creaky old elevator up the second floor. Anyhow, make a long story short, I'm auditioning there for this woman agent and her associate. And she says, hold it right there. Now we all grab hands. She said, Lord, help this talented young man, Stan, what's your last name again? Freberg, I said, clearing it up for the Lord, you know, to find the right occupation for his beautiful talents. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, she says, of course there's radio, but have you ever thought about animated cartoons? I thought, my animated cartoons never occurred to me. The woman steps to the phone, gets me an audition the next day with a man at Warner Brothers Cartoons. The next day, I took the bus back to Pasadena, come back to Warner's. There, having got off the bus, I am auditioning now for all these great animation directors, Chuck Jones, Friz Freleng, Bob Clampett,
who are all today legends.
Yeah, they're all legends. Anyhow, I'm doing all these voices, and among them, the voice of Franklin Roosevelt and so on. So they all applaud. I come out there, and Clampett says to me, gee, I got a cartoon right now that I have this little Scotty dog, and I just decided to make him talk like Franklin D. Roosevelt. So I got a job immediately. Chuck Jones says, I'll try to figure out a way to use you, Stan, and, you know, different. And he did. I did many, many cartoons for Chuck Jones over the next decade. And then Friz Freleng steps up to me and says, why haven't we heard of you before, Stan? I said, well, I don't know. I've been around, you know. And he says, oh, well, I didn't mean that the way it sounded. I mean, I'm sure you didn't just get off the bus. Anyhow, that's a true story. I just talked to Friz Freleng, who's like 92 years old. He's still around, God love him, and He, of course, later created the Pink Panther series. So
your advice to young people is to get on the bus.
Get on the bus, that's right. Get off in the middle of Hollywood and listen, beats me, pal. I don't question these things. I don't question these things, Robert.
Well, it worked out quite nicely.
Well, I mean, 6 months later, I'm stepping off the same bus in almost the same location and going up two flights to the Hollywood remote studios of KRLA. For a guy named Cliffy Stone, and my job was to run down the sidewalk and get an audience together for this show. So it was called Coffee Time at Harmony Homestead. There never was an audience in Hollywood. You're kidding? Bunch of hookers just going to sleep, winos. So I ran back up and said, you know, I was, really a shocked look on my face. I couldn't get an audience, Mr. Stone, you know. So he said, no problem. He put on a crowd record, mumble, hubble, 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 you know. And then he interviewed me over and over again. Yeah, well, we're just out here from Tyler, Texas, and the wife and I. Say hello, Ethel. I'd like to say hello to the folks back in Grand Rapids, you know. And he interviewed me over and over, and he keeps saying, let me get through. If I can just get the mic through here just a moment. This is just a giant empty studio. So anyhow, this man... And this must be a magic corner there, right, by this Coca-Cola sign, because this man, Cliffy Stone, later took a rough acetate recording of me doing John and Marcia that I developed on the road as a nightclub comedian. He took it into Capitol Records, and Capitol signed me to a long-term contract, and that's how I became Capitol recording artist. And I met that man, two
at
flights
that same
up
corner.
At that same corner, yeah.
Amazing, amazing.
And you're right, it does read like a cheap Hollywood novel, now that I think about it.
And we just happen to have that record queued up right now. Shall we listen to it?
Oh, why not? Right.
John! Marcia! John! Marcia. John? Marcia. John! Marcia? John! Marcia? John! Marcia. John. John. Marcia. Oh, John. Marcia. Marshall. John. Marshall. John. Marshall. Oh, Marcia, Marcia. John, John. Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. John, John, John. Marcia, 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 Marcia. John, 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 John. Marcia. John. Marcia.
Anyhow.
How was this wet record received by the listening public?
Oh, it was an immediate hit. It was so strange that disc jockeys had to play it because it was unlike any record that they'd ever been prepared for. And a lot of people read a lot of innuendo into it. You know, I mean, after all, it was just a soap opera. It was not, supposed to be... racy or anything, but it was like an abstract painting. People could interpret it any way they want.
Then your next record was a more typical Freeburg record. It was Cry, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Johnny Ray was inundating the country with tears from his record called Cry and The Little White Cloud That Cried and things like that. So I thought it was time somebody did something about that, and I did a record called Try. You Too Can Be Unhappy If You Try, you know.
Ooh-ah, ooh-ah. You're happy and your eyes are always dry. Don't you know that it's the thing to sob and sigh? Singers do it, crowds do it, even little white clouds do it. You too can be unhappy if you try. Don't you know? Nobody laughs it up no more. If your heart ain't broken, you don't know the score. Wipe off that smile and weep a while, 'cause it's real George you to cry. Don't be a snob, you too can sob if you just try. Don't you know? And weep a while, 'cause it's a real joy, weren't you, to cry. Don't be a snob, sit down and sob. Come on and try.
You've said that the best satire is born out of sheer outrage. You satirized records like The Great Pretender, Shaboom, and artists like Elvis Presley, Eartha Kitt, Johnny Ray, and Les Paul and Mary Ford. Did you really hate the music that you satirized, or was there some affection in the satire?
There was not particular outrage in my records against Eartha Kitt or Johnny Ray. It might have been a little more outrage in my records of The Great Pretender or Shaboom. I was not wild about that form of music. I still am not. You know, that was really rough edges rock and roll, man. It was like the tail end of rhythm and blues, which evolved into rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And I had made a few more definitive comments on that in a record called The Old Payola Roll Blues, which you might play sometime.
We will hear that in a few weeks.
In a few weeks, yeah. Or maybe never at all, folks. After all, the P word was mentioned. But now that I think of this is public radio, right? We don't have to worry about that.
That's right.
There's no area for payola here. except, of course, for the money you paid me to come down and do this show. Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Which is a percentage of what I'm paid to come down here.
Yeah.
You get a piece of what I get.
Yeah.
And we'll both retire on that.
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah, right. where were we? Anything significant being said?
If you really hated some of these records.
I hated the way rock and roll sounded at that point. You know, rock and roll evolved into a much more polished, slick, more professionally recorded and professionally played form of music.
Mm-hmm.
But believe me, in the early days, I was serious. It sounded to me like they were deliberately sticking old rags in her mouth so that nobody could understand the lyrics, you know.
In Shaboom.
In Shaboom, yeah. This
guy talk like this, all his lyrics, the song was like that, man.
And I thought, these people have to go to some kind of a class to study to be that inarticulate, you know, or what?
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
All right, hold it, you guys. This is a rhythm and blues number. You got to be careful or somebody liable to understand what you're singing about. You want that to happen?
No.
Well, then you got to talk unintelligible like me, right, Stella?
You said it!
Okay. Now, you guys want to sell a few records?
Yeah.
Well, then stick some old rags in your mouth and take a guess from the top, okay?
Okay.
I don't understand the words now. Real mumbly, huh?
Life could be a dream. Shaboom, if I could take you up a paradise of bubbles. Shaboom, if you'll be done.
Baby, it don't matter. Believe me, it's wise up.
Life could be a dream. Shaboom, the bully on my fresh plan. True. Shaboom, I'm loving you. Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
Come on, mumble, you guys. Mumble.
Every time I look at you,
that's a stuff.
Something hits my heart, my mind.
Da, 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 da,
da. I want you to beg me.
I distinctly understood a word that time. Let's watch it, huh?
Sorry.
You know the rules. I got my eye on you, that's all. Here we go, man. Real monotonous now.
Oh.
Hey, nanny ding dong. Shalanga la langa la langa la lang.
Who's gonna hang on a ding dong? Who's gonna lang lang lang?
All right, let's knock off that jazz, huh, Stella?
Something hit on my mind.
Did
you do what I want you to? Baby, baby.
Okay, smart aleck, I know your type. You're a troublemaker. We sing a Shaboom, right?
Right.
Then how come I can understand you?
Well, I...
What's the matter, man? Don't you dig gibberish?
Sure, but...
If it happens again, I send you back to Hugo with the halter. Okay, you guys. Big finish now, huh? On your mark, get set, mumble.
Shaboom,
hold it, Stella. Not you, Stella. Wait a minute, Stella. Stella. Oh, hold it, Stella. 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 Stella.
Did it surprise you that the very same people that loved your records were the people that loved the records you were satirizing?
okay, a little bit surprised, yeah. You know, not everybody loved those records that I did on rock and roll. For example, the Platters, who made the original record of The Great Pretender, they were not crazy about my record. And a group called The Chords, they they really hated my record of Shaboom. I was on the Tonight Show with them one time. They all moved their chairs about, you know, 6 inches away, like I had leprosy or something.
Now, I know that someone like Weird Al Yankovic, for instance, needs to get the permission of the composer of... Like, he has to get Michael Jackson's permission to do the parodies of Michael Jackson that he does because he changes lyrics in the song. Did you have to get permission from any of these people to do them?
No. I did and I didn't. Let me try and separate two things here. The only reason he would have to get permission from Michael Jackson is if he's going to reinterpret Michael Jackson's music song that Michael Jackson wrote.
Right.
If Michael Jackson was not the composer, then he wouldn't have to clear with anybody.
Right.
But it's because that the performing artist was also the songwriter that he had to get permission. For example, when I did my takeoff on Harry Belafonte on Deo, the Banana Boat song, I didn't have to get Harry Belafonte's permission because that was just my interpretation of Harry Belafonte hollering too loud and having to keep move until he was clear out of the room and so forth. And actually, the publisher of the Banana Boat song didn't have to be consulted either because that was a PD thing. It was an old folk song, and I just interpreted it a different way. But let's take another example. I did a recording of I've Got You Under My Skin, which was a takeoff on the Weavers record of On Top of Old Smokey, where they would, a guy would shout the line, and then the singers would sing the line. Then he'd shout in the lyric, then he'd sing it. Okay, I didn't have to get permission from the Weavers, but we did have to get permission from the publisher of Cole Porter's song, I've Got You Under My Skin.
Well, I happen to love that particular record, and we happen to have it right here.
Deep in my heart,
so deep in my heart,
you're really a part of me.
You're really a part of me. I've got you
under my skin.
Under my skin.
I've
tried so
Something or other.
Something or other.
I've said to myself this affair.
I've said to myself this affair.
Darn it, what are those words?
Oh, darn it, what are those words?
I'm sorry, I lost it up. Let's start the thing over.
I'm sorry, I lost it up. Let's start the thing over.
No, let's take it again from the top.
Pop! On top of old smoke.
Covered with snow.
Covered with snow.
You're singing the wrong song.
You're singing the wrong song.
Now you've ruined everything, egad.
Egad, you under my skin.
I'd sacrifice anything, come to make for the sake of having you near.
I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near.
In spite of the warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my.
In spite of the warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my.
Don't you know, little fool?
Don't you know, little fool?
Never can win.
Never can win.
Use your mentality.
Use your mentality. Wake up to
wake
reality.
Up to reality. Wait for me. But each time I do,
each time I do, the thought of you makes me stop.
At a certain point of my recording career, the legal department decided that in addition to getting the permission of the publisher, maybe I should ask the target of my satire, is it okay if I satirize you, which is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Conrad of the Los Angeles Times or Oliphant or any great political cartoonist would have some sweet time making a living or getting anything into print if they had to all the time, you know, get permission from the White House to kid George Bush or Reagan or whoever. Nevertheless, the legal department insisted that I clear with people all of a sudden. Okay, so I was ready to release a takeoff on Arthur Godfrey and... another one on Ed Sullivan, and Dawes Butler and I did these records. And they made me clear with these people. And, of course, these people said, no, of course not. You're kidding? They heard the record. They were appalled, you know. And no, the answer was no. So the lawyer said, well, that settles that. You can't release that record. So I finally went into the president of Capitol at that time, Alan Livingston, and said, look, you people can't keep me from making a living. This is ridiculous. So he said, okay, from now on, you won't have to clear with anybody. I agree with you. It's absolutely ridiculous, and I'll overrule my own legal department. So you may ask, well, where are those records?
Where are those records?
Yes. Those records, Bob, are still in the vault at Capitol Records. They wouldn't even give me an acetate dub. They wouldn't give me a tape, nothing. Somewhere in the vault, hidden away, are these records. My plan is to have Geraldo Rivera go into the vault and see if there's any trace of these recordings in the vault.
Are there any other unreleased gems that you...
Yeah, there's one on This Is Your Life. We interviewed people who were in prison, I think, at the time. That's not too funny looking back. But the name of the record was This Is Your Life Sentence. And, you know, Ralph Edwards would bring out all the people from his past, you know, the guy that turned him in, the girl that ratted on him, the policeman that arrested him. They all out there crying and hugging and having a ridiculous time. Believe me, it's a lot funnier than the way I'm describing it here. But, yeah, those three are at least in there. And there may be more if I can remember. If I figure out any other ones that are in the vault, I'll let you know.
Okay. And, of course, as soon as Stan lets me know, I will let you know. However, it will be at a new time, which is something that I hinted at the beginning of the show. It won't be until April, but the powers that be have informed me that Funny Stuff will air on KCRW on Sunday night at 10:30. Don't ask me why, but there's the story. And I tell you this far in advance so that I know some people don't get to hear every week, and you might think I've abandoned you if you tune in on a Friday night and find me gone, but that's not the case. I'm hoping you will all follow me to my new spot Sunday nights at 10:30. But meanwhile, for the rest of this month, we're still on at 7:30 on Friday nights, and we'll have three more parts of the Stan Freberg interview and exploration of his work. Special thanks go out to Stan and Donna Freberg and Donovan Freberg for their assistance. Brian Burney of A1 Record Finders for the loan of some very rare and precious stuff. Eric Myers and Bob Carlson for engineering assistance. And Diana Faust and Suzanne Wickham from Times Books, publishers of Stan Freberg's wonderful new book, It Only Hurts When I Laugh, which is highly recommended from me, Bob Claster, your host, who also thanks you for listening and reminds you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.